It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Todd brings us our quick tip of the week. It's travel season, and he says, I created a packing, a trip reminder list a ways back so I don't forget to pack something or also do something before I go on a trip. And it hit me that a new thing I want to add, and maybe we all want to add to our list, is to log my iPad and iPhones into my YouTube TV, Netflix, whatever, Hulu accounts from my home network before leaving. He says, I rarely watch content on those devices at home because I use my Apple TV. However, some apps get picky when you try to log in to them from not your home, especially your streaming TV apps like Fubo and things like that. He says, so if you have not done it from your home location within the last few weeks, do it now or do it right before you leave for a trip. And in fact, he has put it on his trip packing and leaving checklist, his pre-flight checklist, as we might call it here in Mac Geek Gab Land. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1044 for Monday, July 1st, American Zoo Day 2024. Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, or welcome back to Mac Geek Gab. We are the show where we take and share tips like that. We take and share cool stuff found. We take and share and even try to answer your questions tied together into an agenda that all but confirms we will each learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Our sponsor for this episode is Ecamm.live, where you can go and use promo code MacGeekGab to get 1 month free of this all-in-one live streaming and video production studio. It's really cool. I use it often to create the ads. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here, also in New Hampshire, is Pilot Pete. Greetings, everybody.
How are you, Pete?
I'm doing fine. I'm recovering from the move.
The move, yeah.
We moved.
Big move.
New house. Don't move, folks. It's too much work. Too much hassle. Trust me on this.
Somehow, Pete, we had volume levels issues with Pete pre-show, and we goosed everything. And then you said hello to us, and I had to ungoose everything. Whatever your issue was, is solved. And we created a second one. That's all right.
So did I overmodulate? I'm sorry, folks, if I did.
I don't think so, but it was time to shave a bunch of gain off of you real fast.
There you go. Yep. I hope I didn't blow your speakers, everybody. Well, listening to my dulcet tones.
You can blow our minds instead, Pete.
There you go.
I'm with you on the don't move thing. I've moved entirely too many times in my life. We did a lot when we were up in the Pacific Northwest when we were younger, and it got really bad.
Yeah, I moved a lot as a kid, and then even as an adult, Lisa and I were moving like every 5 years and like relocating, you know, and it was fine. I mean, it was always a pain in the neck. The one that we did 19 years ago when we moved here to New Hampshire, that hurt a lot, like physically it was just exhausting. I was like, oh, is this what it's like when you're older? Because I wasn't as old as I am now, it turns out. Maybe it was moving with kids. I don't know. It was the first move we did with kids that were like active humans as opposed to like babies, so I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't make it easier for sure.
No.
Our move out here,
I moved a lot. Okay.
I was saying our move out here was probably our easiest because we made the conscious choice that we were not bringing hardly anything. Like, we sold and got rid of everything and just said we're starting new.
Yeah.
So we brought very little stuff. So that made it easy.
That's good. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we went from an attic and a basement and a big garage to a half a basement and a smaller garage. So things like my military uniforms, which have been hanging there for 25 years doing absolutely nothing, they had to go.
Gotta go.
But it's amazing how much other stuff we managed to accumulate in all those years that we just didn't need, but got to hold on to it for, be it sentimental reasons or just, I don't know what, but.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a disease for sure of just collecting stuff. But
Carlin had a big routine about that.
Get a bigger house,
so you get more stuff.
Get more stuff. You got to have more stuff. I've joked that I want to pretend we're moving and pack everything and throw it away. We did that. We had I think we talked about this, I don't think on the show, but we had a mold issue in our attic. And to get it cleaned out, we emptied our attic. And it was like, okay, we're definitely not putting all this stuff back up there. Like, we don't need 3/4 of this crap. So anyway.
Yep.
You got a tech-related quick tip for us there, Adam?
Yeah, I think I do. This is from Patrick. He said, I had an interesting thing happen the other day. My wife sent me a business card via text. Later that day, the person that gave me the card sent me a text message, and in messages it said, Siri found a contact. I haven't seen this before. I've seen info scraped out of email signatures, but not off a picture of a business card. I'm not too worried about privacy, but after I heard someone was selling a contact list called Wealth and Unhealthy, so I moved my search from Google to DuckDuckGo, because DuckDuckGo doesn't always provide the best results. He found a tip that if you start a search with bang G, so the, you know, exclamation mark G, DuckDuckGo will pass that off to Google in Safari. So you can, and this is apparently a DuckDuckGo feature. He took it one step further and put up a keyboard maestro, you know, set it up a keyboard maestro. So it will automatically, when he hits a keyboard combination, go to the beginning of the line, add a pound G to his current search, and he can hit return and then make the search happen. So if it doesn't get what he wants in DuckDuckGo, he can get it on Google. And I thought that was a really, really cool trick.
Huh.
And apparently there are over 13,000 of these different bangs, as DuckDuckGo calls them. There's a link that we'll put in the show notes, or is in the show notes, and you can go use those. So they have them for like making it go to Wikipedia, making it go to your favorite streaming service. So there's like one for Netflix. There's just a ton of these. And apparently this is a DuckDuckGo feature I had no idea existed.
What?
Yep.
That's crazy.
Oh, I'm going to have to play with that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, yeah, Reddit, Twitter, Wolfram Alpha. Will they search AltaVista for me? No, just kidding.
potentially.
Yeah, but it might.
One other thing to add, the found in context thing, I'm pretty sure that's now powered by the new text and images processing that your iOS devices and your do now.
Mm.
So, you know, where you can actually go into photos, and if you have text in a photo, you can select that text because it's automatically processed.
Right.
And that's all on device. So really shouldn't be a security concern, but that's how it found it in the, you know, the image of the business card.
Oh, interesting. Right. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Wow. I need to teach my fingers some of these at least, because there are times when I want to take what I've searched on DuckDuckGo and go search Google, and I go and I like copy and paste and, you know, launch Google, the whole deal. So, I like it.
Yep.
I like it.
I got another one from Martin.
Go.
All right. He says, is a PSA for those of you who live life on the edge, because this is Spotlight on macOS 15 Dev Beta 1. So he's running the beta, and he came across a thread he found on Twitter and Reddit about a bug that causes Spotlight to start writing a large amount of data in the order of 26 terabytes a night.
What?
That's what he says. Whoa. There's a link to the Twitter post and then the Reddit thing, so we'll have those in the show notes. But he did some checks and found it was happening on his system as well. So you're going to want to disable Spotlight if you're running macOS 15 Dev Beta 1. This is a really good PSA for reminding people, like, do not run betas on critical systems or machines, because there's inevitably going to be little things like this. And this one's not really little, because it's going to consume all of your 26 disk space really, really fast.
26 terabytes sounds like a rough night. Like, that's, wow.
But here's the upside. I mean, look how fast his disc is.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of disc did you get to write that in? Like, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
That's a lot of writing. You know, it'll mess up your SSD real fast. So
real fast. Oh. Yes. That's fair.
If you want to keep using it, well, you know.
Yeah, but if you want to brag.
If it's doing that every night, writing.
Yeah. If you want to brag about it writing 26 terabytes a night, then, you know, maybe that's
there
its
you
purpose.
Go.
Yeah. Wow.
Right.
Huh. All right. Good. Good to know.
All right. Well, how about I take us to PC Unix with this quick tip? He says, this morning, I wrote a non-techie article about Apple's AI implementations. While writing it, I had an extensive conversation with ChatGPT. When I was done, there was a lot there that I may want to refer to later, but I'd need to copy each question and answer separately. Time-consuming. So I asked ChatGPT to put everything into one copyable code block, and it did it. I then asked it to rearrange all of it into a coherent document, which it also did. I copied both of them off to notes for my further use. So, yeah, hey, ChatGPT, just make that into usable data for me, won't you, please?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
So,
that's a good reminder of ChatGPT's ability to, like, it is an interactive, I mean, that's the T
yes.
part of it, right? It's transformative, and that means you get to tell it how you want it to transform things, and that's, to me, that's the part of it that's most useful. I mean, I've taken data and given it to chat. You know, you all know I'm petrified of regular expressions, because I don't know, my brain and them, the two, have yet to figure out how to meet. So if I need to, like, write a regular expression to massage some text, I don't do that anymore. I, assuming it's text that I'm comfortable pasting into ChatGPT, and that needs to kind of be, like, think about that. But assuming it is, I put it in there and I say, you know, reorder this or change the whatever, make it all initial caps of this with sorted by, and, you know, find the lengths of this. We had to find the lengths of, like, the longest podcast. And it was like, well, we could just paste in the RSS feed of the show and have it find the top 10 longest episodes. I was like, yep, no problem. It was like, yeah, here you go.
Yeah.
So,
although it does have a limit of about, I thought about 2,000 words or something.
Yeah.
Like that,
Claude will do more, whatever okay. that is. Claude 2 from, is that Evolution Labs or Claude? I think we're actually up to Claude 3, Claude.ai, whatever that is now is, would be the one to use for that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Is that not familiar with Claude? Is that a, free implementation or?
It is free. I've never paid for it, and I've used it.
Okay.
Anthropic is the company name that does Claude, and it's now up to 3.5. So, yeah, you can. I've nice. Used it, and I've never paid for it. So, yeah, whatever that means. It might not still be free. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you'll find out, folks, when you go to use it.
That's right.
So, got another one from Bob, who wrote in from last week's show. He had a quick addendum to our first, to our quick tip in 1043. He writes in, gentlemen, throwing that term around loosely, in addition to the long press working on the Mac, this tip also works on the iPhone and the iPad. And I thought we'd discuss that, but without the numbers. You simply long press as you would do on a Mac, and a row of accented versions appears above. Without lifting your fingers, simply swipe up and over to that desired version and then release. And I'm constantly amazed by the number of long press tricks. And I'll throw in here, folks, one of the things I use to make my password, my simple password, more complex is I use that in my password on my iOS devices. I use an accented letter. So now you can get into my phone when I'm not looking. My father's family, Bob continues, is French-Canadian, and my last name includes an accent aigu, which is an E with a forward-leaning accent mark. Obviously, it makes a big difference in how the word is pronounced, and for those of us old enough to remember, Chrysler made a car in the late 70s, I love putting this in, called the Plymouth Volare, with an accent on quality, not the accent aigu has a long A sound. Nicely played, Bob. But he says, here's the main point of his tip, a word of caution. My devices have learned how to spell my name automatically to include the accent Deku, which is great. The problem happens when you're filling out an online form. More often than not, the system on the other end doesn't recognize the accented letters and either puts in some incorrect character or omits it altogether. And this becomes troublesome with credit cards, which normally do not include accented letters. And I've had to go back and change it to an unaccented letter in order to have the denied purchase fixed. So his tip is, if you're doing this, be aware that, you know, your online forms set yourself up to be able to quickly, I think, switch in between so you don't wind up dealing with denied purchases, among other things.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, long press tricks, keep them going.
I love it.
What I learned from that is I'm going to now make all my passwords just emojis.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, as long as the database in which your password is being stored.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, maybe.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
Accented characters should work. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I do remember having some difficulty at one point when I was trying, and this is many, many iPhones ago, when I was trying to, I think, restore it to factory settings and then get back in, I was having an issue with the password because I had the, I had it in there. And so I don't remember, but I remember that starting fresh was tough with that password.
Yeah.
For some reason, the keyboard wasn't playing nice.
Good sites and databases should fully support Unicode at this point in time, but yeah. I wouldn't rely on it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Oh yeah. Right. If a database was built, 15 years ago or something, and they just haven't updated it, it might not have full Unicode support. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about some databases that you and I have built over time, Adam. you build it and it works and you just keep, updating the code base around it. But you so rarely go and say, hey, look at the encoding on our database. Like, when was the last time? As you're saying it, I'm like, well, every database I have. So, yeah. Yep. One last quick tip for us comes from Todd, who says, I wanted to start recording my weight in the health app via my iPhone. Great idea. He says, I looked for a shortcut so I wouldn't have to type it in like an animal. And I found one. And he said, I renamed the shortcut log weight and used it for a week or so. This morning, I held down the side button on my iPhone to trigger Siri and accidentally said log my weight. And I got a pop-up that said Siri needed access to my health data. This was my first clue that I wasn't using my shortcut. I allowed it and got a very nice pop-up that relayed the weight that had successfully entered into the health app. The second clue, I went to my wife's phone and tried the same thing. She does not have my shortcut. When I said log my weight, sure enough, tapped through giving the appropriate access and was able to enter my weight. He says, don't worry, I didn't enter my weight on my wife's phone. yeah, good call. He says, my wife's iPhone does not have the shortcut, of course, and this proved this. But yeah, he says, and he adds as a second part of that tip while saying, hey, S Lady Works, he says, I like holding the side button to get her attention, kind of like I like Wi-Fi, but I like Ethernet better. I'm not sure I would conflate those two, but you're welcome to.
Good stuff. I'm forced inside my house, most places inside my house, because I have an original HomePod.
Oh.
And that dang thing, I will be so far away in the kitchen and I will say, you know, S Lady, very, very, very quietly at my phone, and inevitably the HomePod, which is like rooms away, will like pick it up. It's crazy.
That's interesting, because I have that with our A Lady units. We don't have HomePods in our house, and that's okay. But with the A Lady, I'll be in one room that has one, and I'll say the wake word, and it will be the one two rooms away that's like, you know, the sound bounced the right way. It decided this is where it should get picked up and all that stuff. That I can only imagine what that would be like with HomePods and the S Lady. Yeah.
Here's the thing. It wouldn't be a freaking problem if Apple would sync timers, for God's sake.
Oh.
Because that's usually what I'm trying to do. But it's usually like when I'm grilling, and so I want it on my phone because I'm going in and out of the house with my phone. I'm like moving around, and that HomePod's way off in another room, and I'm not going to hear it when I do not know why timers do not sync.
I mean, it knows it's you, right? Like it's not like that's interesting. Huh.
Why is it locked to the one device that you set the timer on if I have iCloud and I have iCloud syncing and like.
Wait, so if you even intentionally set a timer on one HomePod and it starts going off and you're not near that HomePod, but you're near another one in your house, that one won't tell you, hey, you have a timer going off on the kitchen HomePod?
I don't think so.
Oh, the A-Lady does that. That I mean, it starts, the alarm first starts going off on the one that heard you first, right? Presumably the one you intended to use. And then from there, it will bounce, you know, around and sort of say on all of them, I think, like, hey, timer's going off in the kitchen, FYI. So you would think that like the HomePod and Apple's whole ecosystem would alert you everywhere, including your phone and your watch.
Yeah, why not?
That's a great question. Why not, Apple? All right, folks, have you ever felt like your live streams and video recordings need a bit of pizzazz? Well, don't get caught in the dark ages of video production. Use our sponsor, Ecamm Live. I just used Ecamm Live for that interview I did on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices, and it worked so well. I almost thought it was magic. It just worked, right? Ecamm is the all-in-one live streaming and video production studio for your Mac. Whether you're a streamer, podcaster, or just want to jazz up your meetings and presentations, Ecamm has got you covered. You can stream and multi-stream, records videos, you present into apps like Zoom, Teams, Meet, and more. Imagine having a full video production studio at your fingertips, camera switching, adding graphics, lower thirds, logos, and even bringing on guests remotely or in the studio with you. It's all the same. And the best part, it's super easy to get started, but fully customizable for all you tech wizards out there. Don't get caught with boring videos. You can learn more at www.ecamm.live. That's ECAMM.live. Okay. Get 1 month free of Ecamm Live using promo code MacGeekGab at checkout. That's 1 month free of Ecamm Live when you use promo code MacGeekGab at checkout. And the website again is www.ecamm.live. And our thanks to Ecamm Live for sponsoring this episode. All right, it is. Yes. You got
time for questions.
You got us, Pete.
And great. Tips. I do, yeah. Because Jane wrote in, and she wrote in, "Hi, Dave, Pilot Pete, and Adam. I have a recurring issue with my iMac Photos app version 9. My Mac is a 2021 M1 iMac desktop running Sonoma 14.5. I have my photos downloaded to my Mac and also use iCloud to sync them. My photos are all organized in folders with albums. For example, one folder is birds, and the albums are various types of birds within that folder. Some of these have subfolders with albums as well. For some unknown reason, out of the blue, I'll notice that many of my albums have moved out of their previous spots in their folders and placed randomly in the albums area. Sometimes the albums get placed into the wrong folders entirely. Even folders seem to move on me. I'm not sure if it could be a setting or the way I sorted the pictures. When I select Library View Sort, I have sorted my oldest capture date. When I select Albums View Sort, I have sorted by name. The other thing is, by sorting the albums by name, I find that Smart Albums mixed amongst the folders. Is there a way to sort them by kind to have them all at the bottom, maybe? Not sure. I use Smart Albums for videos, unorganized, unable to upload and reference. Otherwise, I don't tend to use Smart Albums as a routine. You guys are the best. Yeah. And such a joy to listen to. Thank you, Jane. Thanks a million for your help or any thoughts, Jane.
So I have thoughts, but not real great answers, I don't think. And so this is a little bit stump the geek, I think. The one clue that I see in there that I'm aware of is when you're using albums, right? Because I use albums in my photos and I do kind of some similar things. And I have them specifically in an order that I like. So I have certain albums that I want first. So I have gone into my photos and manually, you know, you can drag your albums around and you can put them in an order.
Okay.
And that works great and it syncs to all your devices. But similarly, she mentioned, I go in and I change the sorting. Well, if you change the sorting, it will sort it by name, but now you've just undone any of your manual work that you've done. Like, that's not maintained. I don't imagine that that would mess up the subfolders, though. If it does, that's really wonky and bad, in my opinion. Like, if I've set up an album and then I have sub-albums in there, and then sub albums, it should keep that all together, I would imagine, and organized. Maybe within that, you know, sub albums, maybe if you're doing by name, those albums would flip. But she even mentioned like albums showing up under the wrong album. And I don't understand how that could be happening without some manual intervention. So that's the part of this I'm a little bit puzzled by. But I do know that if you change your sorting, it will resort and then that will sync everywhere if you're using like iCloud photo syncing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I validated that, you know, when she sent in this question with my photos. So I just, you know, I moved something around manually. It changed. I changed it to sort by name. And then when I went to my iPhone, everything was sorted by name for my albums. So it undid all of my manual sorting. So right. I had to put everything back, but yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Go.
I had a thought in there, and I was wondering if there was any other kind of database corruption in there. And I know that you can rebuild repair your photos database, and you hold down the command and the option key when opening photos and allow you to repair it. And you would definitely want to make sure you have your entire album backed up, lest you really didn't repair it into oblivion.
Right.
But I'm wondering if there's some kind of corruption that's otherwise unknown in there. But I think Adam's more on the right track, frankly, that, you know, you can sort it one way. And as soon as you do it, as soon as you change one thing, it's going to go back to doing its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like I'm kind of with you, Adam, that it shouldn't start pulling things out of subfolders. Like, to me, something is doing that. Now, it could be you on a different device or a different device doing it, thinking it's something you wanted it to do for whatever strange reason. I don't know. But I don't know. I think I like the idea of repairing the library. I had forgotten that you could do that in Photos on the Mac. So thank you, Pete.
Yep.
I was thinking of like Power Photos. Could that, you know, slurp your photos from an existing library into a new library? And that, of course, rebuilds the indexing and all that stuff. And maybe that makes it better. That seems weird to me.
But and I do want to mention, we truncated it out of the email she sent, but she spent some time on the phone with Apple support over this, right. And they gave her the old shrug shoulder salute. So
yeah, the on the smart album thing, those do get organized just like any other album. So again, if you sort by name, it's going to just sort those by even the smart album name. She asks, you know, is there a way to keep them in a certain place? And the only thing I could think of there is the old trick that we've used in the Finder and any other place where, you know, if you put a like tilde at the front of it, it's always going to sort to the top. I forget there's ways to get things to always sort to the bottom if you're sorting by name.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of to do there. And I don't remember how to get them to sort by, because like I have albums that are year numbers, and those are always at the top, obviously, because numbers will come before letters when you're sorting by name.
I actually will use the trick. Just I'll use AAA for something I want at the top and ZZZ at the bottom. Yeah. But you know,
shouldn't ZZ be at the top though? That's what the band told me.
Well, yeah, that's right. ZZ Top. I see what you did there.
You know, I never thought about. I never thought about the. I've been a fan and aware of ZZ Top for a long time. I never researched where they got their name, but as you were saying that, it kind of crystallized for me that might be exactly where they got their name. I don't know. Yeah. Huh. Oh. Huh. Yeah.
You could ask Jeeves.
I could ask Jeeves. Nice. Wow.
There's a callback from 20 years ago, huh?
Yeah. Wow.
Or longer.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. What are we doing next here? I have no idea.
We got a question from DJ.
Sweet.
DJ says, my son is using ChatGPT voice to work with ChatGPT in conversation mode. Apparently, to end that conversation, you must hit a physical, it sounds like icon or button on the phone, or a software button, SW button.
Yeah, I think
in
a software
app.
Button. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, okay. So physical button on the phone or a software button. You have to basically trigger it to stop. Either way, what happens is when his wife comes to talk with him, ChatGPT remains running and gets involved. He'd like to be able to use a verbal S-Lady voice command to turn off the ChatGPT session. He's made a shortcut to start a conversation with GPT voice. He can either run the shortcut by speaking to S-Lady or double tapping on the back of the phone using the accessibility feature. What he has not been able to do is use voice or tap to stop the GPT voice function. I'm planning to play with this, but decided to check here first because this question came in on the Discord to see if anyone has done something like this yet. Thanks in advance.
There's two things that come to mind. The first is, sure, wait till the fall and make sure that the iPhone is one that will support Apple's AI features. And then, use that, which is going to be in iOS 18. That, though, brings up a question. I do think I have an answer for DJ Mac here. But the question is, we know that Apple's AI is limited to phones that are fast enough to make the experience good in Apple's estimation. And that all makes perfect sense. I get it. However, when it offers to pass it off to ChatGPT, that doesn't use any significant amount of horsepower on the device. So will people with lower speed devices be able to have the ChatGPT S-Lady integration already? Like, there's no technical limitation that would cause that. So I'm curious if, in fact, that will happen. I know John Gruber asked, I can't remember the Apple engineer's name, the product manager's name, about this, about why certain devices and not others. And she gave the answer, yes, you know, it's the speed of the device. It's not like we're trying to sell new iPhones. It's like, well, if we take the speed of the device out, I don't know. I think the answer, you're laughing. What? Okay.
Because that's rhetorical.
It's rhetorical.
It's Apple market.
Yeah.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. They're not dumb. Yeah. Apple's not dumb, right?
No.
Like,
no.
They know if they leave certain features out that people are going to buy new devices. And then, you know, once those sales kind of go down, we'll see like what typically happens. And then they'll be like, oh, look, now you can do it on these. I mean, we've seen them do stuff like this before.
Many times.
You mean like Find My in your Siri remote on your
Apple
TV.
Don't get me started, Pete. We don't swear on this show. Yeah, we don't swear on this show. What do you mean? Duct taping an AirTag to the back of your Siri remote isn't the solution?
I actually bought a little remote, rubberized remote silicone holder that held both the remote and the AirTag.
That actually makes sense.
Because I got sick of having to look for it in the couch cushions.
Oh, yeah, that thing is a cushion diver more than any other remote. Like, I like if that thing goes between the cushions, I hear it hit the floor like instantly. It goes straight through.
Yeah,
it's gone. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe as well go to the basement. It's going down. Yeah. It's down there somewhere.
It's down. It's way down. That's right. You want to take apart the living room or you just want to use your phone, which is a good workaround when you're on the couch and can't find your Apple TV remote. You can use
with one exception.
Inbuilt remote on your phone with one exception, which Pete is.
The volume. I can't turn the volume up and down with your phone.
I use the volume buttons. I'm pretty sure I have. No?
I don't think so.
Like I've when the remote.
The side, you're talking the side volume buttons
I'm
on your phone?
I'm talking the side volume
in
buttons.
In a remote. Really?
Maybe.
That
I don't,
may be a quick tip, Dave. I haven't tried it.
I can't say this for certain, but I've definitely never had the frustration of not being able to do that.
It never occurred to me to try the volume buttons on the side of the phone when using the phone as a remote.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm thick like that.
Well, no, it's not. It's obvious once
it
you,
wasn't
once
on
you
the screen.
Know it. It's not on the screen. No, I get that. I'm pretty sure it worked. But I should say that we have Sonos in our living room.
Yeah.
And I have an Arc and a sub
essentially
near the TV. And then I have two Play 3s as my rear speakers.
Yeah.
And one of the Play 3s is within arm's reach behind me. And the Play 3s have volume buttons on them. So I will often just reach back to control the volume that way. And it controls the whole system.
Never.
It's not just that one
speaker.
It
never occurred to me to do that either. So I've got Sonos 1s for my rear speakers, which also have the volume. It never occurred to me to reach over and do that.
Yeah, it works. That I can absolutely confirm works.
Yeah.
So it's possible the remote thing didn't work, and I was like, well, screw it. Just use the thing behind me.
Yeah. Whatever. So I will report back next week.
Cool.
It the chat in Discord kind of has the answer, which it's yes, but... So it works depending upon how you have your audio hooked up to your Apple TV and how you're routing it, right? So some people are saying, oh, I use HomePods, so that works. You know, if you're probably just running it normal through your Apple TV into your TV, but if you've got something hooked up, like I would doubt that mine works with my Sonos because I have the old original Sonos bar and it's infrared.
Right.
So,
yes,
if the remote's going to do that,
if the remote's sending infrared, then that wouldn't do it. That would make sense. But if it's doing it through
mine's infrared,
well, it might be HDMI CEC too.
Yeah.
And if it is that, then the Apple TV box can do it. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I'll report back, but I'm using the, what's it called? The fiber cable from the TV to the Sonos. For the audio.
That's not HDMI CEC.
Correct.
That it's fiber, Toslink or, you know, whatever.
Toslink.
That's why mine doesn't work because I do the same thing. Yeah. I use the fiber optic audio cable. And you can see when I use my remote to do the volume, the light on the Sonos, on the front of the Sonos, lights up, right? To
lights
indicate
up.
That it's getting a,
It also lights up for me, though, when I control the volume through HDMI CEC. So... and hey, Pete, FYI, I found a knowledge base article.
I figured I'd
summon my inner John F. Braun and find the right Apple knowledge base article. Yeah, absolutely. And, it shows that the volume buttons on the side of the phone
control
that. It also shows, calling back to earlier in the episode, the search dictate button on that we talked about as the Siri button on the far side of the phone also works to trigger that for your TV. So, yeah.
Another one that I would have never thought to use.
Yep, same. That, despite thinking to use the volume buttons, I never would have used the button on the other side of the phone. So, yeah. Yep, there you go. I do have an answer, however, for Michael's question. I know. We almost forgot we were doing it. And that is a thing that Federico Vitici over at Mac Stories wrote last year, which is called S-GPT, which he describes as a shortcut to connect OpenAI's ChatGPT with native features of Apple's operating systems. And it is, although, now he says he's removed it. because he doesn't like ChatGPT. But maybe you can find an SGPT repository out there somewhere. I know that shortcut could still exist because if you had it on your phone, but he doesn't like the fact that ChatGPT and other LLMs like scrape the open web without publisher's consent. And I can get why, as someone who makes his living publishing, a website would not like that. They also scrape podcasts, FYI, just, you know, like once they chewed up the entire web, they started going to YouTube videos and podcasts. So we're all in there. But that at least was built to do things very much like you are describing. So if you can find SGPT out there in a shortcuts repo, which it might exist, then you can use, or if you know somebody that has it, they could share it with you. I don't think I installed it on mine when it came out. I remember messing with it, but I don't know that I installed it. Anyway, somebody might have it. Ask in our Discord, macgeekab.com/discord. Somebody there might have it and be willing to share it with you. So there you go.
Yeah. Or you could probably send something to feedback@macgeekab.com.
You could send it to feedback@macgeekab.com, but I don't think any of the three of us have it. So you might be better off in Discord, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have it. So, but you could still try feedback@macgeekab.com.
And we'll send the question to Discord to get an answer for you.
And we'll say, yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Jeremy has our next question. He says, I'm at my wit's end. ScreenFlow won't record my screen. I've done all the settings checks, even reinstalled the app. It was working fine a month or so ago, but now all I get is a black video. It records, it appears to record the video and audio fine from my camera or whatever, but just no screen. There's no error message, just a ScreenFlow file with video, audio, but no screen capture. He says, I am using an older version with macOS 14. He says, I'm using version 8, not the latest 10. And it was working, but now it's not. I've used it for many years and the support has been fine when I've needed it, but now they don't even respond. Oh, that's not good to hear. That's the worst part about this. Any ideas, including suggesting an alternative? Pete?
Yeah. So I actually seem to recall some years back having a similar issue with ScreenFlow. It was about to cost me both a laptop and a window in my home where I found a solution. And my solution was the alternative. And I just quit messing with ScreenFlow, which was too bad because I really enjoyed using it, as I recall. But I use a program that I know you've never heard of this, folks, but there's this thing called SetApp where you can pay a little money and get all of these great programs. We may have mentioned it once before on the show. But in SetApp, there's a program called Capto, C-A-P-T-O. And that is my go-to screen recording. It'll do screenshots, but what I really like about it is it'll do screen recording. It will do an area recording. So you can tell it, hey, I just want to record this area of the screen. So you can do it like a little window, but you can choose which window you want to record from. It has its own built-in browser, so you can record from that if you'd like to. And when it's all said and done, it puts it in an organizer for you. And then you can take the video down to the bottom and you can edit it. You can trim it. You can cut out of the middle. You can crop. You can add graphics and text, and Capto is a super powerful screen recording, then video editing. It's a wonderful little program to, if you're going to do tutorials or what have you. I love Capto and have been using it for years, ever since ScreenFlow left me high and dry for no apparent reason.
Thoughts, Adam?
I responded to Jeremy on this as well. The first thing I would check, I mean, I doubt this is what it is, but it could be, is go into your system settings, go into privacy and security, and check screen and system audio recording and make sure that didn't get toggled off or removed. So if that app is not because I'm sure it already had permissions at one point because it was working. But if it got toggled off or moved to audio only or something weird happened, maybe that's why it's not working and it's not able to capture your screen because it doesn't have permissions anymore. And I think if it originally asked and then it gets turned off, I don't think it prompts again, like when you launch the app.
Right.
I don't think I've had that happen with apps. Like if I've given it permission and then taken it away and not reinstalled the app or something like that, I doubt it would ask again for that permission, but I'm not sure on that. The other thing was, as far as alternative, you know, you have screen recording built into your Mac. You can use QuickTime, or I like the shortcut Command-Shift-5, which will bring up a little menu and give you options for doing screen captures as well as video captures on your screen.
That's what I use, is Apple's built in. Now, it doesn't have all of the editing. I mean, it'll open in QuickTime and you can trim things. In fact, QuickTime's video trimmer is the most efficient video trimmer I have ever found on the Mac in terms of speed. I take our every week after we finish a show, I take the video that that StreamYard records, the all-in-one video, which has pre-show and post-show, and to make Sadie's life easier so that she can find segments that match the timestamps in the show, I trim off the pre-show and post-show so that the timestamps of the video match the timestamps of the thing. And like it takes, you know, I do the little trimming and I hit save, and I don't know, it's a couple gigabyte file and it takes 20 seconds to save it or something. If I were to do that in like a video editing app, it wants to re-encode and do all that. I don't know what QuickTime's doing that's different from all those when it trims things, but it's great for it. So, but doesn't have, it has some video editing, but it's not a video editor. So that would be where something like Capto might be better off.
One of the things I do with Capto is like I'll blur out a password or a username or something like that if I'm sending an example to somebody how to log in and do something on a given website and that's nice, and you can blur out portions of the video. And
okay, yeah, you can't do that to my knowledge, you can't do that with QuickTime. My brain on Jeremy's question jumped to, I know some websites like YouTube, Netflix especially, go to great lengths to make it so that things that think they're going to capture your screen won't be able to capture the video from, you know, a Netflix movie or something. So you can't make a copy of a Netflix movie that way. And I don't know what Jeremy's trying to. It sounds like this is not a specific issue for Jeremy, that it's more widespread. But, you know, maybe there's a Netflix window open and that somehow blocks the system. I don't know. I mean, it's a stretch, but it's worth throwing out there that there are some things that try their darndest to not let the capture APIs see what they have to offer. So, yeah.
Sure. Yep.
I don't think that's the problem here, by the way.
Well, I was going to mention this earlier because I thought of this earlier and it left my mind, but I was also wondering, did he change his monitor connection to HDMI? Because doesn't HDMI have that like hardware copy protection BS in it where it again thinks you're trying to like grab something copy protected and then it won't let you capture the screen?
Sometimes. Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't think that would get in the way.
God forbid you copy something you own so you can use it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Moving on to.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Should we go to Harvey?
Let's do it.
All right. So Harvey writes in. He says, "Hi, Dave, Pete, and Adam. I'm attempting to copy text from my WordPress website and paste it into a document in Pages. Every time I do it, it takes a while, and then everything pasted are in bold question marks, like, and you know, 24 question marks in a row in boxes instead of the words that were copied. When I look at the format sidebar, it is listed as a series of question marks in boxes as text As text, the font listed as .last resort. By highlighting the whole question mark text and choosing a real font from the font menu, everything I copied shows up as it's supposed to. I'm doing this for a lot of files as I'm trying to make a pages document from all of the posts I've made this year. How do I stop this from occurring? I cannot locate a .last resort font anywhere on my computer to delete it from font mapping. And it's only in the body of my writing that won't copy properly. So any thoughts causing this and a way to copy and paste without having to change every time would be helpful. Harvey.
Yep. Harvey's not going to find the last resort font anywhere in his system, but it is there.
Really?
And I learned this from his question because I was like, oh, what is this? This has got to be something special. So last resort is actually a special font in general. And I think it's on a lot of systems, but Apple has their own version and you're not going to see it in Fontbook. You're not going to see it anywhere because it's deep in the system. And the dot last resort was a clue to me because people may or may not know this on the Mac, right? If you have dot in a file name at the beginning of a file name on a Mac system, that means, you know, hide it. But there's a great article over at Vice from 2020 that goes like deep into this if you want to know all about the last resort font. So you can go read that. We'll link to that. But my guess is what's happening for his specific issue is in WordPress, he's probably using a very specific font that's probably not part of his system. So when last resort kicks in is like, it's the last resort. I can't find a replacement font. I don't know what this font is. I'm going to use this last resort font. And for the characters, it's just putting in this box with a question mark because that's what it maps to for whatever text he's pasting. So what I would do is rather than doing a regular paste into your pages document, instead of command V for paste, do the paste and match style command, which is command option shift and V, because that's going to force it to paste into pages with the currently selected font in your document. So if your document has Helvetica as the default body font, when you paste it, it will come in as Helvetica, not trying to use the font, you know, from WordPress. Because my guess is it's trying to use the font from WordPress, which could be some weird web font. And it's trying to match that styling, right? So you just need to tell it, no, use the styling from my document, not from the original text in the clipboard.
So there was a discussion in Discord about this week. And Harvey tried your idea and it didn't work. That's where I would have started too. I know. Yeah. It should work. But he says, I tried doing that paste and match style. Nothing pasted at all. As of right now, all I can do is highlight the weirdly pasted text. And he says, I have a shortcut now that converts all highlighted text to the style with the font that I want. And he went on. Some people mentioned using other things. Randy Walker in Discord suggested making a plain text document in like TextEdit or BBEdit. And using that as the interim doc, mm-hmm. I use BBEdit for this often because BBEdit is basically Unicode only, right? And so it has no font formatting at all. So paste into BBEdit, highlight in BBEdit, copy again, and now whatever's on the clipboard, paste into your pages document, and that should just be text with no styling whatsoever. My favorite way to do these things, because it skips the BBEdit step, my favorite way might not be faster, but it feels more efficient, is that Keyboard Maestro comes with a series of like built-in macros, that like pre-created macros, and they have one called Type Clipboard, which literally, like at the point where your cursor is, it types the text. It does not paste text in. It acts like its own keyboard and types the text. It is slow compared to pasting, where pasting, everything is dumped in at once. This is, you see it slowly, sort of methodically typing out. But I've had it work in scenarios like this, where it's like, yep, we're just going to type the characters that are there. So that might be another thing to try. You know, beyond that, I don't know. So
I have one more idea. I'm assuming he is maybe pasting directly from the web browser on the front end of the WordPress website. I wonder about going into the actual post on the back end, going into the, you know, text mode or whatever. I mean, that might bring formatting, but I wonder if you copy like directly from the back end of WordPress instead of the front end.
Yeah.
That might make a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that working. I mean, it's worth trying. Like you said, you might inherit the same or different problematic formatting. What I'm curious about is this last resort font, right? Like, we know why it's there. We know that it is there, and we know what it does. And thank you for finding that. That's awesome. Yeah. Why does it not have like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K? Like, why does it show everything as question marks? Like, why would the last resort font not be something human readable?
That's a great question. Okay. I think because it's specifically designed, it's my understanding, it's specifically designed for like Unicode stuff. So why it doesn't do regular letters, I don't know. Again, you can read that. I didn't read the full article from Vice. I just found it.
Sure.
So I bet you the answer is in there, but
yeah.
Unless you all read the full article, I have not.
I did not read it. No. I couldn't possibly have done that. No. yeah. Interesting. I love little mysteries like this. Speaking of mysteries, we had back in episode 1040, Ralph wrote in about varying write speeds on his SSD. He would see like full speed writes during large copy operations, and it would slow way down and then speed back up again and slow way down. Listener Bob wrote in and said, those symptoms sound very much like SSD or NVMe garbage collection. Transfers are going great, then a sudden slowdown. After a bit, it all goes fast again. Digging a little deeper, Bob says an SSD can only write to a pre-cleaned sector, which is then remapped to have the disk sector address the write was addressed to. The sector that was previously using that address is put on the garbage collection queue. Most SSD drives are over-provisioned with several gigabytes of spares, which is where the pre-cleaned sectors are allocated from. Depending on the vendor, there may be a few or a lot. He says OWC tends to use SSDs with generous over-provisioning to make their drives a faster experience. If you write a moderate amount of data to the SSD, there is generally more than enough pre-cleaned spares available. All the replaced sectors end up on the garbage collection queue, and during idle time, the SSD will start cleaning those dirty square sectors to then be the pre-cleaned sectors to use the next time. However, if you write lots and lots of data to the SSD, then eventually the writes will exhaust all of the existing pre-cleaned sectors and force the drive to go through a garbage collection in the middle of the transfer and start cleaning sectors, which basically pauses the transfer and during the garbage collection. So that might be the there's even more detail because Bob, that's what Bob does. But that's the gist of it. Maybe that's actually even more than the gist, but that checks out. I think Bob might be right here. It sounds like this is something that Ralph does often, and so eventually those, you know, the drive needs to do garbage collection, and that's that whole trim support thing that we obsessed about for a long time and
right.
All of that. So yeah, good call. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the note. Yep. I don't know. Yeah, anything to add to that, guys, or are we moving on?
Nope.
Great. Sweet.
That's way beyond my knowledge.
Yeah. Over my head.
Yep. I could barely read what Bob wrote us, and I think I understand it, but thank you.
Hang on to the tail.
That's it. Hang on to the tail.
Smarter people.
That's it.
Do things.
Yep.
Well, I have a question from Michael.
Okay.
He says, hello, Dave, Pilot Pete, and Adam. I was a longtime listener of Adam's MacCast and followed him over to the Mac Geek Gab. I love the show and all of your advice. Well, great. While I have never been an IT guy, I have created and maintained Excel and Access macros in the aughts and tens, I guess you would say. So I at least understand the basic capabilities of an automation. My question and angst are about Apple shortcuts and automations. So far, I have created 6 automations that run almost every day, 3 that change my watch face based on the time of day, 1 to play music when CarPlay connects, 1 to set my car parked location when CarPlay disconnects, 1 to display a photo of my gym's card barcode when I arrive at the gym. More than once in the last few months, my gym card automation has stopped working. It is not all that complicated. When I arrive at the gym, open the Photos app, display a photo, specific photo of the card. When I try to fix this simple automation, it is very difficult to find that commands I think, I should use. The app is not intuitive at all. So he says, how did I accidentally corrupt the automation? Why is the automation app so counterintuitive? How can I back up an automation once it works like I want it to? And will iOS 18 and AI make my angst go away? Hope all this makes sense. Thanks so much for all that you do for the Apple community.
Yeah, great question. I don't know. None of us, the people that even get to download beta software, have seen Apple's AI, Apple Intelligence implementation yet, right? It's not out part of the beta. Certainly there's people inside Apple, but they don't answer questions like these for all of us. So I don't know. I do know that ChatGPT has helped me write shortcuts in the past. So at the very least, it could interface with ChatGPT to do that. And also you could use ChatGPT today to do that. And I've had it guide me. It, Shortcuts is a weird app. It's not like ChatGPT, when if I ask it to write Apple script, right? Like I can copy and paste the Apple script into script editor and, try it and test it. You kind of have to follow it can give you instructions and then you have to go and manually build the shortcut based on the instructions because there's no copy paste in that sense from ChatGPT, at least not yet. But that's where I would start with it. I wonder if you could paste in a screenshot of your shortcut, existing shortcut, into ChatGPT and ask it to troubleshoot it for you. That might work. I don't know. It's worth trying. These are and I love questions like this because it forces me to think about, things in ways that I haven't before. But it also hopefully spurs us all to start thinking and then the feedback at MacGeekGab.com is where we all get to sort of, we promise, and we've done it for, over 19 years, we're going to keep doing it to funnel that information out to all of us when it's valuable and helpful, because that's what we love to do. But, or our Discord, same kind of thing. So yeah, that's where I would start with that right now as to why the app is counterintuitive. I think the argument from Apple on that would be, well, once you use it and understand it completely, it makes perfect sense, right? I don't mean to be trite about that, but a lot of coding and automation and, all of those things are like it's a new paradigm. And so sometimes intuition is not your friend in learning that new thing. You just have to sort of, and this would of course be my advice to myself if I really wanted to learn regular expressions. They are not intuitive to me at all. However, I know that if I did it, for 30 minutes a day, by the end of 2 weeks, I'd probably be like, oh, why did I make this such a thing for so many years? So I think that's where the intuition on that can change. And backing up automations, can you back up? I know you can back up shortcuts, but I don't think you can. You can't share an automation. That is true.
Oh, an automation?
Right, because like in the shortcuts app, you have shortcuts, and then you have automation.
And, right, yeah.
Shortcuts I can share, like I could share a link to a shortcut with you guys, right? Or with the public. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine. But automation, no. Like, I don't...
Well, because it's got he's got geofencing on it. He's got personal photo in there, like you wouldn't want to share it, right?
Well, but even like even just backing it up for himself, like
right.
I that's a great question. Screenshots would be the one to use. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that before we move to cool stuff found?
No, I mean, on the gym card thing, Kiwi Graham has a great point for something we mentioned on the last episode is you could, instead of using photos, do the pass for wallet thing and actually turn it into an actual wallet pass. And then you could geofence that. And maybe that would be more reliable.
Pass for wallet. That's a new one. We mentioned pass to you, I think, in last week. But that's fine. No, this is great.
Similar name.
The more the merrier. Yeah. Yep. I like it. That's good.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It makes life easier to display because then it's right there on your watch. Although the automation of just bringing the image up, that's great. Unless some passes, like when I go to a concert, as I get close to the venue at the right time, my phone is like, do you want to show this ticket? You know, and it's like
right on the front. Yeah.
It's right there.
It'll
ready.
Do that.
Same
at the
with boarding
at
passes.
The gate.
Right. So can with like pass to wallet, can I create something that's, you know, geo related for?
I think just passes, right? Can't you do that with a pass?
Yeah. Well, and they have geolocation in them. So, Kiwi Graham states the same.
Passes have geolocation. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. All right. Great. Yeah. Perfect. Great. So, yes, maybe that's the answer is just do that and then, you know, let your fingers do the walking. I don't know. What did I just do? What did you call it? The shoulder shrug salute?
Callback. Oh, yeah. There you go.
The shoulder shrug salute.
And a callback to the old Yellow Pages ads.
Well, that I did for sure. Yeah. That's kids. You can ask your parents about the Yellow Pages. So, yeah.
What's a Yellow Page?
Yeah.
It's a really old page.
Yes, it is.
Okay, now you're going to take
one.
Now you're going to take us down a rabbit hole because I had to go deal with an issue with a pink slip. My daughter, we're giving her basically the car she's been driving like for forever, and there was an issue with the pink slip, and I needed to go get a new one. And so I went down to the office and I said, "I need a new pink slip," and she's like, "I don't know. What are you talking about? We don't have pink slips."
Yes, you
I
do.
Said, "Oh." I need a new title for the car.
Yeah.
And the older woman next to her, like, was just laughing because this was a younger person.
Yeah, of course.
Like,
that term, I don't think my kids would know what it, I mean,
racing
I don't.
For pink slips.
Racing for pink slips. I don't think they've ever heard that phrase unless it was in an 80s movie or something. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And even then,
like, it's not pink.
It probably went right over their head. Like, what are they talking? Pink slips? I don't know. Are the ladies wearing
we
slips
pink,
under their dresses?
We don't have pink slips.
No, we don't have pink slips. We don't have
anyway,
pink slips.
Should we do a little bit of cool stuff found?
You have to bug out. Yep, absolutely.
So this is a great one. We were talking on the previous episode about using an iMac as a monitor and the challenges not being able to do that and stuff like that. We came back with a bunch of different things. Well, this cool stuff found came from Robert, and I had no idea this thing exists. It's actually it looks like it's a Kickstarter, so it might not be an actual product yet, but there actually is a hardware solution if you're really technical and willing to do it for reusing an iMac as a 5K monitor. Now, I think it only right now is supporting the 2011 27-inch iMac, but it is a logic board swap. So this company is developing a full logic board that you will be able to swap or trying to swap with your monitor. And he linked me to a video of a guy who got to try this out. Apparently it works. So, you know, and hopefully, you know, if this is popular enough and enough people want it, they'll keep making this. And they're going to make a couple of different versions, including one, I think, where you can put a Mac Mini on an M1 Mac Mini inside the monitor. And it's kind of a crazy project, but very, very cool.
Wow.
That's brilliant.
It's called Juicy Crumb, the Juicy Crumb board. And I think it's out of Australia.
Okay.
So. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be widely available or anything, but hey, at least there's enough people thinking about this, like, hey, we should be able to salvage these great, you know, machines and not let them go to the junkyard and, you know, repurpose them.
Right. Because the monitors are fat. New lips. They're fabulous.
Yeah, they're nice.
Wow. Huh.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And then the only other thing that I think is worth mentioning from Robert's feedback is he also talked about, we went on to talk about virtual and emulated displays and, you know, jump desktop and stuff like that. And he brought up a little more details. He says, when you create a virtual or an emulated additional monitor on a Mac or primary display on a headless Mac Mini, it doesn't use Apple's built-in graphics accelerator processing and defaults to a lower resolution emulated screen. And so this would be the similar for, you know, anything like that. I think Luna Display is part of it. And we had mentioned of the OWC HDMI dongle.
Yeah,
that's what that's for. That dongle creates a handshake like you actually have an HDMI monitor connected to the Mac, which makes the Mac think that it has that. And so then emulates at the kernel level all the video acceleration and graphics acceleration. So that's why you use that, is to get that boost from a remote monitor.
Because
if you're
right
going
way.
Headless, yeah
it will. Got it. Oh, that's really smart.
I had forgotten about that was a thing. Like, if it doesn't have a monitor connected, it won't use its acceleration and all that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Cool. All right. Well, that's why it's cool stuff found. Brian brings us our next one. He found an article at MacRumors about something coming in iCloud, an iCloud drive, really, in Apple's new OS's. Is that there is now a keep downloaded option where you can flag a folder or even presumably a file, but certainly a folder on your iPhone, on your iPad, or on your Mac and tell it, I know I'm doing the optimized storage on my device, which means everything is not necessarily downloaded locally, but this folder or file, keep it downloaded all the time. So selective sync is what Dropbox and some others use as the term for this. And we are getting selective sync in our on our devices in the fall or whatever. So I think that's great. Yeah, that really brings iCloud Drive a step closer. I know we talked about also the fact that iCloud Drive doesn't really have versioning. That would be yet another nice addition to iCloud Drive. But, you know, one step at a time, I suppose, that's what we are going to. We will take what we get and we will like it. Thank you, Apple. Yeah.
I would prefer they go one step beyond.
Same. Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to? Oh. All right. Thank you for that, Adam. Harvey has, I'm looking at the time because I know we have, Adam has a hard out, but we're at the end here. It's fine.
We're good.
Yep. Harvey, there's two more I want to mention, and I think we'll get there. Harvey says, you mentioned in the WWDC recap about the math notebook and being able to write your equations in iOS. You can do that now, he says. I've been using the MyScript calculator app for years. I use it as my regular calculator. It allows you to handwrite on your iPhone or iPad any mathematical equation, and it will solve it for you. There are a lot of other features as well. I'm curious if Apple, as you say, Sherlocked their math notebook from MyScript calculator. I took a look at this. This looks great. Lucas and I, he put iOS 18 beta or iPadOS 18 beta on his iPad, and we started messing around with math notes on that. It's not as magical as Apple's demo made it seem. I mean, we even went so far as to try and recreate Apple's demo and couldn't get it to like jump in. Because it's trying to intuit what you want it to do. It's going to be one of those things where you have to learn it as opposed to it learning you, at least at this stage of the game. But, you know, we were able to get it to like set variables and things like that. But it It took some time. I mean, it was midnight 30 or 1 a.m. or something on the couch after we'd both had a long day. So we weren't entirely patient with this, but we probably had had a beer before doing this too, but that was okay. He's of age for that now. So we can talk about that, but
it's also beta one.
It's beta one. Yeah, exactly. But it was like, yeah, this is like, okay. Like once it did the things, we were like, oh, that's cool. But like, we weren't in a time crunch to solve a problem. I feel like my script calculator still has quite a bit on Apple's
thing. That's a great app, by the way. I've had that for years, too. I mean, it was one of the early, early ones. So, yep. And I haven't tried it recently, and I can only imagine it's gotten extremely better.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Well, I know I think we're going to call this here. I know there was one more I wanted to get to, but you know what? That just means we're going to have to do another episode, guys. So,
again?
I know. It's going to be how it is.
All right, well.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Yeah. I hope those of you in the USA enjoy your July 4th, whatever you're doing with your family, friends, or perhaps by yourself. Like, that can, it's alone time can be fun time, too. So, no problems there. But, yeah.
Get some fireworks. Go blow something up.
Yeah, exactly. Drinking beer and blowing stuff up.
That's right.
Please keep
shut off some fireworks.
Keep all your fingers attached to your hands. Please, please, please.
Don't try this at home. Professional,
that's right.
Driver, close course. That's right. Matt Geek Gab is not responsible for lost limbs.
Thank you, Pete.
Eyes, noses.
Yep. Yep. Lawyer Jeff just stopped texting me as soon as you said that. So that was good. Yeah, that's right. Thank you for listening. Please share the show with a friend. That would be an amazing thing. We would very much appreciate it. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to our sponsor, ecam.live. Coupon code MacGeekGab gets you that free month. And yeah, come listen to, you know, if you want other shows, Pete's got So There I Was. I have GigGab and Business Brain. And also come to MacStock. Code MacGeekGab saves you $30. So. Adam, you got any advice for the people that are going to be shooting off fireworks and drinking and all that stuff?
Yeah. Don't get blowed up. But also, don't get caught.
Made up.
Later.